Okay, it's a pleasure, privilege. I apologize about the parking scenario and my timing here. The real truth is that we'll accidentally put a different community in my head. Things I came early tonight to the wrong place. So luckily it was in Hendon as well. Shuva, I want to talk briefly about, it's obviously on everybody's minds. And so, just a few things to consider. What time do we finish by then, if it was? there's a few things here. The first thing is this: we say on Yom Kippur, but there's a number of things to speak on Shuvah, but I'll just point this. Al kulam alo kasricha selach lanu mechal lanu kapel lanu. We ask for three things consistently on Yom Kippur whenever we do the alchets. One is selicha, one is mechira, one is kapara. And the first thing I think it's important to know is what is the difference between them. There isn't one approach, although there's a fairly consistent approach to most of the Rishonim. More recently, Rav Hirsch has some other chidushim, said to the Malbim. But generally speaking, the approach to the Rishonim, the Abar Ben El in particular, says as follows. He says, when we ask for selicha, what effectively we're asking for is that a person, a bit like in English, the word to forgive, meaning that the person won't retaliate against us. In Hebrew, in Torah, we know there's a prohibition, there's an isser of loisikam, you're not allowed to take revenge. When you forego your right to take revenge, that's called slicha, you've been seleach, you've forgiven. But what it doesn't mean is that the relationship is where it was. And therefore, there's another level called mechila, which is where you now give up the next issa, which is loisitar, the holding in this grudge or this resentment or whatever it is. When we're able to let go of that, we've done mechila. And what that means is that when we, of course, the approach that we take, whether it's in a person that we've harmed or whether it's with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the approach that we take will be commensurate to that approach, will be what we get. For example, when we ask, when we think we've damaged person or Hashem in any way, or we've done Avera in other words, or in any way, and we come with sincere desire to in any way make it up, if our motive is, as it can often be, oh my goodness, I can't believe I just did that, they're going to kill me, or they're going to go crazy, then when I approach out of sincere contrition, it will be enough to cover very small levels of damage. It might get forgiveness in most situations, and it will be enough to get perhaps proper forgiving and forgetting, or get slicha mechila, in up to a certain level. The reason is the flaw in that type of teshuva is that ultimately the center of it's me. I'm worried about me. I realize I made a mistake, but the problem is what's dawned on me is that the natural response of you, the justified response would be to retaliate in some way. It might be physically, it might be emotionally, it might be some other way. I don't want that retaliation. That awakens, alerts me to the fact that I did something wrong, so I come and I apologize. But for deeper damage in a relationship, where the relationship itself is undermined or harmed, people who approach with that type of attitude will rarely get forgiven, because subconsciously we can usually pick up where people are coming from. Where a person's motive is, what bothers me is not so much your retaliation, what bothers me is the relationship is so important and I'm scared of losing it, that's already a much deeper place. Because there what bothers me is no longer me, but it's us. And at that point, a person who comes who genuinely feels pain or regret on the fact they've undermined a relationship that's so important, that type of attitude is a much deeper place to come from. You see it in for example, Maseiros HaShoah, I'm talking about different levels of Yira. There's Yiras HaOnesh, where I'm afraid of the punishment, versus Yiras HaRoimus, when I'm afraid of the actual loss of relationship. There's a level even higher. In human relationships, we don't need to go higher, but you can go higher. And the level even higher, of course, is where what bothers is not me, that I might get punished, it's not even us, it's that the other person's hurt. That I'm hurt by the fact that I could have hurt them. Even if they have to never talk to me again, that's not what bothers me. That's already the Shlach Kodesh speaks about a Yira that's effectively at the flip side of Ahava. There's a fear that is ultimately, a fear is just an awareness of consequence. But the fear that is the flip side of love, which is, I can't believe I hurt that person. Or I'm so worried that I'd ever do anything that would hurt them, that's what motivates me. But that's all about Selicha Mechila. Bein Adam L'Chavera, between any human we've ever hurt, the only thing we want to get is Mechila. Slicha mechila. Slicha's one level, we want mechila. When it comes to us forgiving others, we have a chiyuv, we have an obligation to be mochel, right? To forgive and forget. But kapara never occurs in human-to-human relationships. There's no such thing as me being mechapeh you. You will not find it in any rishon. as far as I'm aware. Maybe some of you know Rishon where it occurs, but I'm not aware of any. But you'll find that you're mochel. You're supposed to say Hareini mochel. We say it every night. Hareini mochel l'chol mishechis. We use the word mechila when it comes to humans. We never use the word kapara. So what is kapara? Now, if we have more time, we'd do some real analysis here, but I'll let you do that in your time. If you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuvah, one of the things you'll notice is he doesn't start talking about Teshuvah till the second chapter. He assumes Teshuvah. If a person's done any chait, anything, any chait that's been done, whether it's minat Torah, midrabbanan, it's asei, lo asei, b'zodon, b'shkaga, it doesn't really matter what it is. Kol mitzvah shebe Torah, it doesn't say explicitly midrabbanan, but bein asei, bein lo asei, im avadam alachas men, bein b'zodon, b'shkaga, kishi yaseh Teshuvah, when he's doing Teshuvah, yashem mechetoy, chayav litzvadis b'nei kal baruch hu. The whole first chapter is all about vidui. There's even a discussion amongst, primarily in the world of the Achorinim, over why the Rambam, does he even hold as a mitzvah of Teshuvah? Does he not hold as a mitzvah of Teshuvah? It's quite natural to believe there's no mitzvah of Teshuvah because it's no need for a mitzvah of Teshuvah. If the Torah tells us to keep Shabbos or not speak Lashon Hara and we break one of those, the Torah's told us to get back on track just by that. It hasn't given us permission to stop keeping Shabbos or to break Lashon Hara. So it's not clear if the Torah needs a mitzvah of Teshuvah. But a vidui, a confession, that is a mitzvah for. There's an explicit mitzvah for. And the reason for that is, according to the Rambam, if you look carefully, you will see that in the first chapter of Hilchos Teshuvah, all he talks about is vidui, his confession. What he talks about is kapara. Vidui, confessing what we've done, achieves kapara. He does not use the word silicha once in the first chapter of Hilchos Teshuvah. He used the word mechila only once. And you'll soon see why it's an obvious word to use. But it's all about kapara. In other words, what is kapara? And kapara, I'm going to slightly embellish, but effectively what the Baba Nada is saying, and it seems the Rambam is saying too, is this. When a person does an avera, when they do something that's negative, apart from the damage it does in the relationship with humans if they've hurt a human, and apart from the damage it does in the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, in any avera done, there is one other element. There is an actual existence of evil. Now, on what level we take that metaphysically and how we understand that will vary from school to school. But on some level, there's an actual existence of evil that's doing some kind of damage somewhere. If, you know, if in the physical world, if I launch a virus into cyberspace and somehow the entire world forgives and forgets, the one thing that will still not happen is there's... What I did, the consequence and the damage is still all over the place. It's live, it's causing damage. Kapara seems to be that process by which we can delete and remove that virus, whether it's in the spiritual world, wherever exactly, so whatever exactly it is that we've done, the metzias, the existence of evil itself, is what we hunt down and destroy when I say it, and which we basically daven for, if you think about it. Every time we do a vidui, every time we confess, we say, on Hashem, you know, please God, chotasi avisi pashati lefana, you know, I did all these things, vasisi kach v'kach, I did specifically A or B or C or D, and now I don't want to ever go back to it, and then we ask, slach lana mechal lana kap lana, please, can you go ahead and not only forgive and not only forget and restore the relationship, but can you actually go and destroy the evil that was done? That is what we're trying to do in Yom Kippur. In fact, the Rambam says, he divides the different avaras based on the Gemara in Yuma, but the way the Rambam learns it is like this. If a person failed to do a positive commandment, they didn't give tzedakah, let's say, or they didn't put on tefillin, or they didn't light candles for, whatever they didn't do, and the minute they decide, you know what, I'm becoming a Baal Teshuvah, or I slipped up there, I'm doing Teshuvah right now for it, that's it. I'm going to now, from now on, light candles, put on tefillin, give tzedakah, whatever it may be. All the minute they've done it, loy zazim misham, says the Rambam, you do not move from there, ad shemoichalin loy, until you've got mechila. Why not kapara? That's the only time you didn't mention mechila in the first chapter. Because there's no kapara to get, because you don't get kapara for failing to do a positive mitzvah. You didn't create evil. You just failed to create good. So as long as you've done it, once the relationship's forgiven, once you've committed to do the mitzvah again, boom, everything's restored, on we go. For loisa says, for any negative command, that we need kapara. And the Rambam says, if it's light, avera, whatever those are, so then, and there's different stages. Those that we do tshuva, tshuva is toilin, it suspends, it like freezes the virus, it can't go live. Of course, if at any point we don't want the tshuva anymore, the virus goes live again. But if we hold that attitude all the way through to Yom Kippur is mechapeh, it destroys it, it's gone. And now, interestingly enough, if you regret the tshuva until you actually do the avera, and there's no avera. Then more severe averas, so tshuva plus Yom Kippur creates the freeze on the virus, and Yisurim, when actually there has to be some kind of consequence. It does have to come and do some damage. It will do it into us, and therefore we'll go through some suffering in this world, and then it will be gone. For Chilul Hashem, bless you, and for Chilul Hashem, we have to go a bit further. Shuvah plus Yom Kippur plus the suffering, bless you, will together suspend the virus, so to speak, and then it will stay frozen and inert until the person leaves this world. At the moment of death, it will go. That's how the Rambam classifies these things. But what that puts, what that means is a number of things. First of all, as we approach Yom Kippur, we do have to make sure, number one, that we've got Slicha Mechila. And that obviously includes, obviously, from human beings that we damage. One of the things that does not work, because the Lashon the Rambam uses, and it's really based on the Gemara, and this is universal, Rabbeinu Yonah, pretty much the same, and everywhere you look is the same. If we don't know we've hurt somebody, then these classical Erev Yom Kippur, if I've ever hurt you, please forgive me, texts probably do their job. Or I hope if I've done anything to you, forgive me, I forgive you. But if I know I hurt somebody, and I know what I did, and they know what I did, if they don't know, then there's a question of, am I damaging them by telling them? But if I'm not damaging by telling them, and or in a case where they do know exactly what I did, they may have forgotten it many years ago, or they may not, then my obligation is to be mafias. And mafias, it's not enough to say, you forgive me, I forgive you. I have a responsibility to the best of my ability to undo the damage. And that means I have to, at the very least, go up to the person, unless to do so will hurt them. Right, somebody we're in a strong relationship, you know, that might, you don't necessarily go up to an ex-partner or somebody where they just don't know about it and hearing it will actually damage them, maybe not. But in principle, in a normal scenario, I go up to somebody who I insulted and said something horrible to 2 years ago, and I haven't really done a proper, I've done a kind of Erev Yom Kippur, you mechel me. I have a chiv to go up to them and say, you know, 2 years ago I said something to you, or certainly if it was this year, 6 months ago, we were in public and I made a bit of a joke at your expense. And I realized looking back that it would probably hurt quite a lot. I know you didn't say anything about it, but I realized it's probably quite a hurtful thing. I regret it. Is there anything I can do to make up for it? That's the chiyuv pius. Usually, in most normal situations, unless there's a lot more damage in the relationship, that is actually, people are very impressed when people do that, and they're usually willing to be meichel. And on the contrary, that itself, that acknowledgement that what I did was wrong and hurtful, is often powerful enough to actually genuinely get a genuine mechila. But it's our obligation to do that pious. And if they need more compensation from us, if there's financial damage or so on, then we have to be willing to go and compensate to whatever level. So being mafias a person is much more than just a quick, will you forgive me? I forgive you. I forgive you. Forgive me. You know, that's okay for somebody we don't think we've hurt. The chances are most humans who are not angels in the immediate family environment, in the world of the in-laws, in people in the workplace, there's a relatively high chance that just by being imperfect humans as we are, that there may be people where we need to go up to. The worst time to try and remember that's in the middle of Yom Kippur. It's often, it's usually too late unless they're in shul with us. I have once walked over to somebody in the middle of Ne'ilah, actually, I once remembered many, many, many years ago. But genuinely speaking, it's too late for this year. We'll have to do the tshuva straight on Motzei Yom Kippur and then wait for next year. But that's a chiyuv that we have during our Aseres Yemei Teshuvah. Another chiyuv we have is the same with us and Hashem. One of the interesting things about the vidui is, although the vidui tries to use general categories, the vidui does not discuss specific. I mean, one or two of them, like ma'achalat asur, so that covers a lot. You know, a lot of them, you can kind of work out where our averes go. But first of all, we should have done a cheshbon before Yom Kippur of all the things that we might have done wrong this year, b'mezud or b'shogeg. And if we do cheshbon nefesh relatively regularly, it's quite easy to see it. And if we don't, having a device nowadays is fantastic because you go back in the calendar. And it's quite helpful trigger when I go back. But you need to spend a few hours trying to do this. Go back and remember each this, and I put a meet. Oh yes, that reminds me, I behaved badly. It's good to trigger everything we might have done wrong in the year. Because we do have to do an individual vidui on every single thing we've done wrong in the year. So if I know, for example, that I one day, that I once, I don't know what, woke up on Shabbos morning, forgot it was Shabbos, switched off an alarm. So it was an Avera B'Shogeg, but I got to do the vidui for it. No, none of the Archeites mention that. So I have to, not only do, I've done the tshuva already, I've already decided I'm never going back to it and never going to do it again. It was a mistake, I've got a better safeguard, I've got a piece of tissue over the alarm clock or it doesn't go, whatever I've done to make sure I don't do it. But now I have to say, An Hashem, you know, please Hashem, Chatasi Avisim Shalati Levanecha, and I switched off an alarm by mistake on Shabbos, or last Yom Kippur, I got up straight away, washed my hands, and I was out to Yom Kippur. Or I did something not so by mistake, I did something on purpose that I shouldn't have done. We have to do an individual vidui for the actual averus we've done. It doesn't help. Now, it's also very important to do vidui on Yom Kippur itself, but it's worth also at least preparing the vidui lists with where our averus go in them. If on Yom Kippur we suddenly remember an averu, then it's good as we get to the closest relevant al-chait to say in English after and I remember I actually many years ago mistreated a teacher of mine in school. You know, I got obviously asked them for mechila and so on. I mistreated a parent. I said something not nice to the parent. You know, so but and if we've hopefully done the tshuva before, then we know that when we get to that bit, at least once we should say it. If we haven't done it before Yom Kippur, at least on Yom Kippur. So that's a very important aspect of Hilchos Tshuva that I think is key. The next thing I want to talk about is, any questions on that so far? Yeah.
So you say that.
Was there a drink somewhere there? Oh, look at that. Fantastic. Thank you.
And what you're saying about Kapara, is that only available between man and God? It's not available between man and man.
Yeah. Now, when we damage man and man, we've also created an Avera. So Hashem needs to, but the man and man thing is restored by Mechila. The man and God bit is not yet, because there's still an existing evil out there. There's still something that's real. So every time we do a Ben Adon HaChavera sin, we also have to say do Tshuvat Hashem. It's also an Avera Ben Adon HaMakom as well. There's no Ben Adon HaChavera. It's not also one of the Tayag Mitzvahs. So, but the focus has to be on restoring that person. On restoring, that's where our energy has to go. That's where our emotional feeling has to go. That's where our responsibility lies. Once they've forgiven us, we still then have to also say sorry to Hashem. The Al-Chaits do a very good job of the Bein Adam Lachaveras generally, but again, they don't have anything specific, right? There's no, you know, I could say it's an Al-Chait that I used my tongue or I ran to do something or whatever, but the specific Avera has to be specified separately. Even things like Shvashov, the ones where we actually list the category of mitzvahs, which is more rare, we should still specify individual things in the Al-Chaits. Any other questions? Yeah.
Do you think there's any halachic worth in general state texts or posts on Facebook saying, if I offended you, then I'm sorry? Is there any halachic worth in it at all, or is it?
It's not completely worthless. It expresses something, and we do have an obligation to be moichel each other, so reminding people to be moichel is very good. I think it's a little bit better if somebody is going to do that, say, if there's anything I've done that hurts you, please feel free to reach out to me and tell me. I may not have been sensitive enough to notice. Those sorts of things are probably a little bit better, because you do want to give somebody permission to come to you and say, now that you're mentioning Erev Yom Kippur, you should know that I am struggling with when you said this, I felt hurt by it. You may not have meant it. You know, you want to invite people to do that. I think that's to be a little bit more, but it's not worthless, because if somebody sees and says, you know what, I'll forgive them, you've helped them do a mitzvah being mochel as well. And for very light things somewhere, look, you know, when families call each other, I hope you forgive me. It's also, look, in those sorts of calls, I think there is a genuine mechila that a lot of people are just willing to overlook and wipe the slate clean. So it's not absolutely worthless, but it's not good enough when we know or suspect that somebody may be hurt because of us. By the way, interestingly enough, this is not time to go through the lomdus of it, but it seems there is a plausible case that on Erev Yom Kippur, there's a special mitzvah to ask mechila even where you're completely in the right, but somebody was hurt. There's a Gemara about Rav, who every Erev of Yom Kippur would ask somebody forgiveness, even when he hadn't done anything wrong. So you see that if somebody's hurt, so for example, you had to let an employee go. You did in absolutely the best possible way, you gave him every chance and every method and every this and every that, but you know there's some pain as a result. So there's no Averot necessarily there, and therefore you're not Me'ikah Din necessarily Chayav, but there's still a good thing to try and see if you can alleviate the pain in some way. That's a separate issue. Now, in terms of our own being Moichel people, by the way, that's also very important, because not only do we want everyone to forgive us, we've got an obligation to forgive others too. And here I want to come to something. Before I get to it, let me just tell you a Rambam that's very strange, Hilchos Teshuva, and then I'll tell you, I think, Mechila is a bit of a clue. When Rambam does start talking about Teshuva in the second chapter in Perek Beis, what he says, he has a few very, very fascinating... You see, we're so accustomed to thinking through the lens of Rabbeinu Yonah's Hilchos Teshuva that if you ask somebody, what are the stages of Teshuva, everyone will say, Charata first, you've got to regret what you did. Then you've got to let it go. Then you've got to maybe then make a commitment, never do it again, and then finally a vidui, your confession. The Rambam doesn't mention the word Charata in Hilchos Teshuva. I don't think he needs to, because why else would you do teshuva? You have to have some kind of regret. But he doesn't actually mention it. He does come up with something similar, which people confuse with it. And he says as follows. He says, Maya teshuva, what is teshuva? Sheyaza b'chot echetoy, that the sinner lets go. It's an interesting metaphor he uses. He didn't create the metaphor. Rambam always, by the way, will use an analogous metaphor to the language of the Torah. And so So three things seem very related. Let it go, remove it from your thoughts, and commit in your heart never to do it again. This letting go is explicit in the Torah. That's the language the Torah uses. Let it go. Now you might think, okay, so use the word let it go. If you've ever read the Moreh Nevuchim, you'll see Rambam is very, very ultra specific about which words he uses where. But, and in fact, you'll see this letting go metaphor is a very important piece of the Rambam. But then he says something incredible. V'chein yisnachem al sha'avah. And so he should regret the part, what he did in the past. But he used the word yisnachem. And you might, and you put it after all the teshuvah. So first you do the teshuvah, then you do the chamas. So you might say, no, the Rambam wasn't being particular which order he put it in. That's not very Rambam. But if just in case you think that here, he brings a proof. He says, shenemak yachrei shuvi nechamti. That after I do teshuvah, then I have nachama. I regret what I did. That's an amazing Rambam, right? In other words, isn't regret going to be this thing that stimulates teshuvah? Rambam says, no. You do teshuvah, and then you should come to regret it. That's like a real good level of teshuvah, because that's exactly what the Pasuk says. Don't blame the Rambam for that. And then he goes on and uses the metaphor. He says, what happens if a person does vidui, they do a confession, and they... Okay, I'm not going to go into that. We're just limited on time. But in principle, what it seems is as follows. First of all, I want to explain this, but to do that, there's two more topics I want to address in very limited time. Topic number one is being mochel others, and topic number two is teshuvah for things we don't think we can change straight after Yom Kippur. Topic number one, forgiving others is a very important part of what we've got to do. We know there's in the Tefillah Zakah before, one of the things the Chofetz Chaim actually changed the order of the Tefillah Zakah so that we would say the piece where we forgive everybody, we're mochel everybody. Now, being mochel everybody is very, very important to do, and it's hard work, but it's one of the best pieces of work to do our own teshuvah, and I'll tell you why. Because when we're not mochel somebody, it means we're not going to take revenge on them, but we're holding on to our grudge, to our resentment, to our natira. That's what we're doing. And how do you know? If you think about it, one interesting thing which I discovered once in a musavad when I was working on this, was somebody said, you know, let's make a list of all the people that we, and all the, whatever it may be, people, concepts, anything I have a resentment to, anything I am not mochel, specifically people. So I thought to myself, you know, I probably have a few people that I have some resentment to, if I think about it a bit. I don't know, maybe 10 people in the world. So I'll start making my list. So this person who I have a lot of respect for said to me, more likely you've got between 100 and 200. I said, why do I look like a very angry person? And they said, no, that's the normal sort of average of healthy, happy people who are not generally very angry at the world. Because your brain can only focus on one at a time. And therefore you don't actually realize how many you have. So I started writing out. I couldn't think of major ones straight away. And then as I was went away, I was actually driving somewhere and some guy cut me up in traffic and I felt very angry. I was like, okay, that one's got to go on the list tonight, you know. And then you start to recognize, oh gosh, yes, actually I'm holding some resentment onto this person and onto this person, and I'm ashamed that I actually hold it because I really love this person, but I have some, I mean, it doesn't mask the fact that I love them, but I do actually have a resentment that they did this or they do that or they hold me back from this or they don't that or they did this to me 10 years ago or this or this or this. And then it starts off coming, but yeah, I actually have resentment against this kid who was horrible to me in school, and I have resentment to this teacher who hit me when I was 7 years old, and I have resentment to this one and that one and this one and that one. And much as I love Torah and mitzvahs, I might have a part of me that resents some of them too. And so, whoa, you suddenly start getting very honest with these things, and there's a large list come out. And then, okay, so how do I get rid of them, right? So he said it's very simple. The Rambam says at the end of Hilchos Deos, there's nothing in the world worth being noike monoite for. There's nothing in the world that's worth getting revenge or a grudge about. And what he's telling you, amongst other things, is if you say, why are you angry at that teacher who smacked you when you're 7 years old, Daniel Rowe? And you say, because that teacher smacked me and it was really painful and whatever, then the correct point the Rambam's saying is that's not a good enough reason for me to hold a resentment now. This is decades ago. Has nothing to do with me now. I'm in no danger whatsoever. It wasn't long-term abusive behavior. It was a one-off thing. So why am I resenting it these years later? Not because of Dover Ba'olam, not because of a thing that happened, but because of me. Because I'm holding on to Deus Ra'os in the language of the Rambam. I'm holding on to all sorts of negative traits that turn a one-off event back then or any life situation into an atira, into a resentment. And I got to look down. It's not too difficult to find. You have pride, let's say, and my pride got hurt at that age, and it still hurts. that I've got a guy that's trying to grab onto this thing and hold on to it for the next decades and decades in life, that I can always look back and feel a resentment to that teacher. Or I have maybe I've even got some dishonesty about it, because I don't remember, surprisingly enough, what I did to deserve it. For all I know, I hit another kid. I don't know. My brain doesn't tell me that story. I forgot it a long time ago. And so on. I've got self-pity. I've got victimness. Whatever it is. These are things. The only time it's not healthy, this is one of the most healthy exercises a human being can do, except about a relationship that's abusive. On that, a person should never feel guilty. They're still resenting and working through it, unless they've done all the work through, and then they may be able to also actually let it go as well on some level. But in normal situations, the normal resentments that we hold, the normal tears that we hold, because somebody in our family or some in-law did this or some person did that, or because of this, or because I feel restricted this way or that way, those resentments, it's worth tracking down what are our deus rois. What are the negative, or midas rois, as we would say, what are the negative things within me, attitudes within me, that are grabbing an event that somebody else did and turning it into resentment? And once we see that, it's very much easier to just be mochel and let it go. Sometimes we can ask Hashem for extra siyata d'shmaya to do so. We can let it go. And once we let that go, we suddenly feel, for anyone who ever has back pain, it's probably all these resentments. The world becomes a different place. We suddenly see how much our gaiva has been, because every material we hold on to shrinks our ability to emotionally invest in anything. It magnifies the ability to get annoyed or upset with anybody or anything. It makes us so shrunken in our self-pity and victimhood that it shrinks our ability to dream big again. And the more we go through life accumulating these things, the smaller and smaller we think. Children dream big, adults dream tiny. To the point where people have the famous question, I can't make a big resolution after Yom Kippur, let me make a tiny one. Is saying a bracha with kavanah too hard? Right, you know, that sort of thing. So it's incredible when we release ourselves from this, and tshuva and middas is a deep part of this. Doesn't mean the middas are gone. We have to do this every night, the constant cheshbon nefesh. But when we're able to be mochel, it's so redeeming and so freeing that we find it so much easier to ask others for tefillah too. And we find it so much. And then something incredible happens. And this is what the Rambam is telling us with all tshuva. When you let it go, you see, the reason we can't. Nechama is the word for regret rather than charata is this. Every time the word nechama is used in Torah, it means to change a mind frame or change a mindset. So one obvious example is nechama velim. The pain an avel's lost, they're never going to get over. The pain will always be there. A person, God forbid, loses a limb. They will always be that they've lost that limb. Maybe now with prosthetic limbs, but in principle, it's always like they lost a limb. The difference is that in the beginning, as the Rambam describes avel, it's like a knife's hanging over. It's like, I can't move. How do I move on in life with this loss? And as Nechama strikes, it's not that we forget the loss, but it's that we learn to move forward even with the loss. We learn to move forward again in life. It's a reframe. And when Hashem says, Ki nichamti, when I want to reframe the world, now that I created, I got to create it all anew. It's the same principle. When we talk about Nechama after Tshuva, what we're saying is, up till the point when I did real Aziva Sechet, really let go. Let go of the grudge, let go of the thing, let go of the behavior, let go of the middle, let go of whatever it was, until I let it go. Somewhere in my subconscious or conscious, I believed that without this, I would be incomplete. I was afraid of letting go and changing, because if I'd somehow changed, this behavior does something to me. It addresses a need in me. And only when I've let it go, ki achrei shuvi, only after teshuva nichamti, can I suddenly change my mind and realize I never needed it. But it's even deeper than that. I'm not going to show you now, but if you look in the Rambam Hilchos Teshuva, Hilchos Teshuva takes a break in the middle. He has the first four chapters talking about Teshuva. Then he has the seventh chapter, which is how incredible Teshuva is. It changes everything. Yesterday, God didn't want to hear from you. Today, you're beloved to God, just because of Teshuva. What happens in between the first four chapters and number seven is there's two chapters on free will, Perek Hei and Perek Vav. And Rambam holds we have the capability of existentially recreating ourselves effectively. We could be like Moshe Rabbeinu, we could be like Yeravam ben Nevat, Ein Mishe Yakev Al Yadoi, nobody can stop us. We can literally transform ourselves in all sorts of radical ways. Which brings me to the last point, and that is only really possible in the process of Teshuvah. And especially, this I add, because it's not explicit in the Rambam, but from my personal experience, and you, if it's valuable to you, then take it, is in the process of being Mochel others. That is one of the most powerful processes to get nechama, to get a completely, radically, whole new view on life. from which we can really go through genuine deep teshuva. Let me just finish with this. What about those averus we think that we can't? You know, Rambam wants us to change our entire life. You know, I think at least Rambam would hopefully grant us that we can't do it in 1 year. So on Yom Kippur, we can come to Hashem with a whole bunch of things that we want to change. We've already changed. We've already done teshuva for. Or that are quite easy to change tomorrow. They're not so difficult. You know, maybe instead of getting to davening 5 minutes later, get 5 minutes early. Maybe that's an easy change. Maybe it's not. But whatever's easy, I've done the teshuva. But then there's going to be all sorts of other areas where every Yom Kippur, I say I'm never going to speak Lashon Hara again. And I find myself by the middle of Sukkot when that juicy gossip comes up. What can I do? So what do I do about that? So I tell you an incredible piece in the Piskamei Arayis. The Piskamei Arayis is the Pittsburgh Rebbe of Ashdod, and I'm not such a big Talmud Chacham that I read every single Sefer that I happen to have read it. I actually happened to have once spoken to a Talmud of his who said, a Chassid of his said something incredible. You know that we have two beginnings of the year. We just had Rosh Hashanah of Tav Shin Pei. We're now at 5780. But we're still in the seventh month of 5779. We're not going to hit 5780 until Nisan. So what happened? So there's a machlokas in Rosh Hashanah, Rav Eliezer, Rav Yeshua, when the year really begins, and Tosfos says, Eilu v'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, they're both the words of the living God. B'tchila alav b'machshava, in the beginning it arose in God's mind to create the world in Tishri, but he ended up actually creating it in Nisan. So when you read that, Tosfos, you feel very cheated. So really, Rosh Hashanah, we're doing like in God's mind, Rosh Hashanah versus actual. He says no, it's based on the Arizal. He says as follows, he says, occurring in God's mind is a very real thing and it happens again every year. And what it means is that our job on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is to create a new occurrence in God's mind, or put it into slightly less abstract terms, to create a new seed of who we might become this year, a new vision. We say on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Aras Olam, today is not the birthday of the world, but the conception of the world. And in Hebrew, like in English, conception means both to conceptualize, but it also means, like Hirayon, Hara'ah, but it also means to impregnate. And we are now, the world is the day of pregnancy of the world. And Kol Bayol and Bailafanov, every individual is going through, and there's a day of a pregnancy of a new us. So that what we walk out of Rosh Hashanah and then of Yom Kippur, based on our work in Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, is a big vision. But it's not a big vision for the day after Yom Kippur. It's a big vision for next year, for 12 months' time. And that's what it is. The vision has started. The seed of the year has started. The conception of the year has already begun. It is the new year. But if somebody looks at us with an old self, they wouldn't even notice that pregnant inside us, so to speak, is a new self that is growing. So we walk out of Yom Kippur in, let's say, 7 or 8 areas you'd like to grow in davening, in learning, in middos, in relationship with our families, in we also need some in health and in financial well-being or whatever, but also in diktukim, in different things, different areas that we're going to look at, whatever they are. And we decide after Yom Kippur, I'm going to take the first two little steps. Let's say one of them is Lashon Hara. So what am I going to do? I can't tackle all of Lashon Hara in one shot. What I'm going to do is I'm going to walk out of Yom Kippur and for half an hour a day, I'll pick an easy half hour a day, like 3 in the morning, you know. Or maybe we're a bit more gutsy, I don't know. Pick a half hour a day, maybe when we're at work. Whatever it is, the alarm goes off on the phone, no Lashon Hara for the next half hour, 20 minutes or 10 minutes, whatever it is. And if that, in those 10, 20 minutes, somebody sends us a message, we just ignore it. Then next, every Rosh Chodesh, she says, we should take out this piece of paper and take more takanas on. Every day we should look at the paper, remember what we're trying to achieve, right, and make sure we do it. Every Shabbos, either before or after Shabbos, we can look at it and adjust. How well are we doing? Do we need to do new techniques? I forgot about the Lashon Hara Tikkun last week. What can I do it better this week? Every Rosh Chodesh, we put new Chiddush. We put something new in. By Hanukkah, says the Piskamei Arayis, you hit the point of what's called Hekar Uba, where the pregnancy is recognizable. It means somebody will look at you and say, you're still the same self, but I see something's going on. Something good's happening here. I'm not quite sure what it is. Whatever it is, keep it up. And through the winter months, that grows and grows. We grow and grow and grow. And we get ready to give birth to it on Seder night. On Achodesh HaZelachem, this is the month where the Jewish people are born. This is the month where the new Jews are born. This is the first month of the year. This is it. So from that moment onwards, up till then, it's we're the old self, but there's a lot happening. Looks like, you know, something big's happening. From that point onwards, we're the new self, but just an infantile version of it, not yet ready to be fully independent. And we carry that through the first 7 weeks of the new harvest, just like the seed is planted after Sukkot and it's reaped. We reap the first harvest on the second day of Sukkot, of Pesach. So too we reap the new self then. And we carry that through till Shavuos, which is the 7 weeks of the first harvest, the whole Omer time. until we get to Shavuos, which is the equivalent of a bar bas mitzvah. That's when we makabal the Torah anew with all the tikkunim that were made. We struggle through the summer months, through the teenage years, so to speak, equivalent as we develop and the different fasts, and we hit the maturity by Elul, where we're now the fully mature vision of what we planted on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And that's Anila Doidi V'Doidi Li. I'm now ready to engage in a new relationship and conceive of a new, carry inside me the new self for the next year. And to the extent to which we have real plans to grow, is the extent to which we can say to Hashem on Yom Kippur, even for the things I can't walk out of Yom Kippur having changed, I now have a plan. And this plan is what I come before you and ask Slicha Mechira for not having got there and ask you for Rachamim. All the way through Slichas we do this. We finish Yom Kippur by doing this. Rachamim is not to say there's no din. Rasid Hashem says that. You can't say that. You can't say din. No din means I had no significance for that time. It's to say give me. It's a few things it says, but the main one is give me more time because I'm growing, because I'm on a journey, because this is my plan for you to be next year. And on that basis, forgive me. And on that basis, give me the support that I need to get through the year. So we covered a lot of things, but all of this is designed, as Hashem, to help us to get to that Nechama. And the depth of all of what we're trying to achieve on Yom Kippur, in getting Slicha, in getting Mechila, in getting Kapara, in doing all the Teshuvah, in being Moichel others, in everything, is to touch a depth of self that we might never have known that we had. And touch a vision of ourself, and Nechama, and a new way of thinking, that can inspire us and lift us to become greater people in the air. Hashem shall help all of us to get Slicha, Mechila, and Kapara, and to be Zecha to Gemach HaSimato. Time for questions.